If you're an established woman in tech who is creating results and making an impact at work, so your workload and stress just keep growing, but promotions and salary bumps remain a distant dream, it's time for a change. Listen, we all know the tech industry has dramatically changed. It's time your career approach did too. You don't need cookie cutter programs or dusty advice from outdated playbooks because what works for tech bros won't work for you. You need individualized, bespoke support to build your brave career, one that reflects who you are as a woman in tech. I invite you to explore career coaching with me. Get all the details, including prices and client results, at tricksteinbach.com. You can stress less, work less, and earn more. You've already earned it. Let's make it happen. Welcome to the Build Your Brave Career podcast, where we flip the script on the tired stereotype that women in and around the tech industry have to be stressed out, overworked, and underpaid. I'm Nicole Tricksteinbach, the International Bravery Coach and your host. Forget what you've been taught. Bravery is not a personality trait available only to the brash. Bravery is a skill, and you already have it. Which is great, because building the skill of bravery is the most powerful way to creating the career and life you really want. As you build your brave, you will stress less, work less, and then earn more. This podcast will help you do just that. Let's dive in. So before we dive in to the incredible guest I'm sharing with you, I want to first normalize that as this episode comes out in 2024, we're about 4 years into a bizarre job market in and around the tech industries. You know, first we had the explosion during COVID, when finally everyone finally woke up to the fact that the spine of the entire economy is us. It's tech. Then we have been navigating, and we are still navigating, the growing and the persistent layoffs that are designed, according to the people doing them, what they have publicly said, to quote, reset the power dynamic. And we know it is also dramatically increasing the personal wealth of very, very few. And we know who they are. And now we're seeing the continued shrink of big names all over the tech industry and the astonishingly fast growth of new names, especially in the medium-sized sections of the tech industry. It has been wild, and I haven't even mentioned the massive rise of AI and copilots. And quite frankly, who really knows what's going on there? Nobody. We may know what's being released. We may have an idea of how it's being used, but we don't understand the impact. And the viewpoints on the impact, they vary in very big ways. So it is a weird and confusing time. And what works just 3 years ago for job searching and career growth, resume design, LinkedIn use, now, today, maybe some of that is good, but quite frankly, most of it likely is not. And that is why I'm sharing this conversation with my guest, Mariana Pavia. It is so timely because Mariana is a Colombian American. She recently completed an 8-month-long job search after graduating from a top, tippity-top U.S. MBA program. She is now in a product marketer role at a tech startup in the B2B space, which is really neat because she's broadening her experience and skills as her background is in the B2C product marketing and strategy space in the entertainment tech industry. Mariana's journey, her experience is so reflective of the bizarreness, the weirdness that is our current job market. Mariana shares such beautiful details about her journey, and I don't want to spoil them. So instead, what I want to do is, as you're listening to our conversation, I want to encourage you to listen to the events that shook her self-confidence. Even with two Ivy League degrees, as well as really big brand names on her resume. And the reason that I want you to focus on that is so that you can reflect on your own career journey. I'm going to guess, particularly since the last 3 years, and catch those times that hit your confidence, whether you acknowledge it so far or not. And do that so that you can get very, very clear and very, very brave on how you will uniquely not only bounce back, but bounce forward to reclaim your intrinsic worth. Let's dive in. So, Mariana, I'm so excited that you are joining us.
Thank you. I am too.
Is this your first podcast conversation? I can't remember.
This is my first podcast conversation.
Okay. I'm so excited you're joining us for your first ever podcast conversation. And yeah, let's just dive right in. So what is the career advice you are bringing to us and our community today?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was a bit nervous to be on here, but it's been a tough time for me for the past couple of months, or a bit longer than that. And I think that based on what I've learned about myself and throughout this process, I think my advice, my brave advice, is that you never lose sight of your value. I think it's something that I did for a while. I think your mind kind of plays tricks on you and tries to, you know, have the little voice that keeps telling you, no, you're not enough, you're not enough. But I think you have to be able to stop it in its tracks. Obviously, in a way that comes from humility, and you have to be able to recognize when you don't know something and speak about it, but always have your sense of intrinsic worth separated from whatever's happening to you, so that even in a storm, you can be kind of a steady ship. I think that would be my advice.
Right for the gold. Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. It's like those things that are happening outside of you, which I think we're going to share your story. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, those things that are happening outside of you, but knowing your intrinsic worth. What a beautiful phrase that I know that I needed to hear today. Yeah. And bringing that bravery in, because I'm just going to be the one. It is wild out there. The job market is bizarre. Some of the most experienced, professional, qualified, connected people in my extensive network, which is all over the world, are not even getting interviews. Incredible. Like, they have a TED Talk. They've been on speeches, you know, they've published in Forbes. Not even getting, and it is just such a bizarre time, particularly in the tech spaces.
Yeah.
All of the big companies have scheduled themselves to shrink. There's so many new companies in the startup spaces, established startup spaces, middle size is super wild. Like, every country, it feels like to me, is a different process.
Yeah.
It's a crazy job market.
Yeah, it's a crazy job market. And for anyone, I think in tech, there was such a long period of time where things just felt like they were going up and up and up. And it was such a stable place to work. There was these exciting, like, startup unicorns everywhere. And now it's just all of a sudden, like, begun to shrink. So yeah, it's a very tough time.
All in service. You don't have to agree with me. This is my podcast, my opinion, but all in service. So people who already have four yachts can now have the yachts that have the mini yachts inside of them with the helicopter droppings.
Yes. Yeah.
So tell us your story. So I know you've worked at some big brands. You're in the marketing space, product marketing. You have a lot of different experience. And then what happened?
Yeah. So I had, so I graduated college and started working in tech. Product marketing, had this like at a really exciting company, had a very good like progression trajectory, doing really well, and then decided to do an MBA as like it just seemed like the right next thing to do. Everyone in my company above a certain level all had MBAs, so to me it just seemed clear that to get past a certain point I needed one. And so I started applying and got into Wharton and ended up going to Wharton. And then, was at Wharton, did another
For our global audience, Wharton is basically Ivy League, right? Like it is the tip top. Yeah.
When my first year at Wharton, it was like the best business school in the world, I think, next to UChicago. So this was like, wow. I mean, when I was applying to business school, it was, I didn't even think that Wharton was a real possibility. So yeah, very exciting. Then I had to get an internship for my first, in between my first, like my first year and my second year, and then ended up getting also a really big name brand internship that it was like, they only hired one person. And I had people telling me like, oh, you're the one. And even as I was about to start that internship, I had some doubts because it was in a strategy role, which I had never done. But I kind of thought, you know what, I got the internship. They clearly think that I can do this. And so I did that internship and did not enjoy it at all.
Yeah.
And in an internship, you only really have, it's like a, I think mine was like 8 weeks or 10 weeks, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
So onboarding onto a new company that quickly takes a while. Onboarding into a new team, learning like completely different areas. So the internship ended up being a lot harder than I envisioned, I guess. I did okay, but the entire time I knew I wasn't doing great. There's a lot of skills that I, like quantitative skills that I was kind of missing or didn't know about just because I'd never had to work in that environment.
Right.
And I was working with people who had been in quantitative positions their entire careers. And so these small details that I didn't know to them were obvious, or even about the industry that I was working in. And so all of that combined and didn't really make a good work experience. And so I left that internship and I thought I wasn't sure if I wanted to go back or not. Didn't get a return offer, which felt pretty shitty.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I had this conflicted feeling because I knew I hadn't liked the role. I knew I wasn't going to be happy in that type of role in a longer term position. I didn't love the company culture. There was a lot of things that kind of made me feel a little bit relieved when I didn't get the return offer, but it also doesn't feel great, right? You've been like rejected essentially. And like, and not only like when you get rejected for in an interview process, they've never seen you work. They're probably rejecting you because they found someone better or someone with more experience or whatever. Maybe you didn't speak correctly in the interviews. When you get rejected after working at a place, then you start to think, well, maybe I'm not that good at working or I'm missing some like key qualities. So then I went back, did my last year at business school, had this like, I had a feeling that I was going to have this like confidence issue. and tried to combat it, graduated, had not been able to find a job because this like white collar recession had started, all the layoffs had started, all the big tech companies weren't hiring. I was interviewing in my old company for a role, and somebody appeared with much more years of experience who had been laid off from another tech company. So they were the obvious hire instead of me. And then I spent like, it was ended up being like 8 months looking for a new role and being in this like very negative spiral, very like having very low confidence, being unable to really tell my story, communicate my worth, and so not really being able to get across that finish line. Then I worked with you and it was incredibly helpful. And now I've since landed a role and I'm still working on those confidence like issues and trying to make sure that I what I was saying before, like I'm a steady ship even with a storm. But I think the biggest thing in those 8 months and in that like loss of confidence, I kind of realized that I had been like, there's this book called Excellent Sheep by like William, I can never pronounce his last name, like Deresovitz or something.
Well, we will definitely link it in the show notes. Excellent sleep or excellent
Sheep.
sheep?
Excellent Sheep.
Ooh, my interest has peaked.
And it's about like the American elite education system and essentially how you're kind of on this like high-pressured conveyor belt.
Agreed.
And so I, in these 8 months that I was looking for a role, didn't have any brand name attached to me for the first time in a while. I kind of realized that I had been on this like high-pressured conveyor belt, right? Like I went to a really like big brand name high school in my area, then I had gone to undergrad at an Ivy League, and then I had worked at like a big brand name tech company, managed to get into like Wharton, another big brand name. And say my other internship was also a big brand name. And then I was kind of left floating and realized that I needed, so but Excellent Sheep actually talks about a lot of other things, not this specifically, but for me, like I realized that I was really getting my worth from these external factors, and I needed to find a way to bring my worth internally and to, yeah, have it come from other areas and think of myself as a holistic person, like not just my work or my studies or what fancy brand I've attached myself to. Because there's other parts of life besides work, right? And those are just as important. And you kind of lose sight of that when you're on this system of like, this is the next thing, this is the next thing, this is the next thing.
I talk about that because in tech we outsource so many things, right? I think we've outsourced our value, we've outsourced our brand, we've outsourced our success, we've outsourced, and so much of the brave work is then insourcing it again, insourcing a definition of success, insourcing, as you said, intrinsic value.
Yeah, exactly.
And to be clear, when I made the decision, and I'm going to make a podcast episode about this. I don't know if it'll come out before or after our conversation here. So I'll hit a few points and there'll be a more detailed version somewhere on the podcast feed. When I made the decision to leave a corporate environment that I had been a part of for over a decade and that I had thrived in, and I had, had all these amazing experiences, it took me 18 months from the moment where I had the, oh, I don't think I can stay here, to actually being gone. And I was working with this therapist at the time. And about 9 months in, she says to me, because we've kind of been doing divorce therapy. And I'm like, excuse me, what is happening? She's like, your identification with this external brand, Like I couldn't even imagine different colors for my own business because I had identified with this brand so much. The product,
yeah.
It was always my company, our product. If, what? No, right?
Yeah.
And it was such important work to do to decouple that, literally to divorce myself from it. And it's messy work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what helped you like the most? And I know that you're still working on it, like you said, and I'm still working on it too, to be clear. Right. But like, what helped you the most?
I think the first thing, I mean, it's like what they, I think the first step was like acceptance or like realizing what was going on. And before I even like worked with you, I mean, I had like, had seen it, that's like seen my own thoughts and like seen how negative I was being. And I started working with a therapist. And that was really helpful in kind of acknowledging the negative thought pattern that I was in and learning how to deal with it. So like one thing that really, really helped me, she kind of said to me, like this negative thoughts are an important part of life. They're like, there is a response mechanism. When you have danger coming at you, you need to have thoughts that are telling you stop, like don't go off that cliff, or don't, or maybe, I don't know, if you want to climb a building and you've never climbed in your life, then that fear you feel of climbing is a very important, like important thought to have to stop you from doing something that will literally kill you. So she said, first you have to acknowledge the thoughts and accept them. And so she would have me have like 30-minute sessions where I would have to set a timer and I would have to just conjure those thoughts, like come up with all of the garbage that I was telling to myself and just say it nonstop, like obviously not out loud, but mentally in this 30-minute period. And then once the timer went off, I had to say, okay, I'm done. I heard you thoughts, like I listened to you. And now anything else that wants to, any other warnings, mind, that you want to issue me, will have to wait until the next day. And so it was like listening to the parts that those like fear messages that are coming up in your head and saying, okay, I heard you, but now I'm going to go and do my life and move and hustle and have my calls. And because like I was personally, I was terrified of like reaching out to people on LinkedIn, like cold outreach. I had this like terrible mental block of like, I can't message someone on LinkedIn and then have a conversation with them or like jump on a phone call. Like it was just like, yeah, it was not even like a concept for me. And so doing that exercise of being like, telling myself, oh, these people will think I'm stupid. Like they won't want to talk to me. They're not going to answer me, all these things. And then I would say, okay, end of negative thoughts. And I'm going to go and I'm going to do it. I'm going to send my LinkedIn messages and I'm going to have my phone calls. And then any other thoughts will be for the next day. So that was like the first thing.
Wow.
I think that started helping me.
A bunch of my clients, because I say to my clients, like, give yourself 10 minutes, allow yourself to write it all down or talk it out into recording, burn it, tear it up, say it to yourself, whatever. But you know, 10 minutes, that's enough. Move on. Like, don't allow yourself to stew. So some of my clients are going to listen to this and be like, is she going to have me do 30 minutes? No, no, we're not. I mean, you can.
I didn't do it for a long period of time. So the 30 minutes lasted like 2 weeks and then you start
decreasing
it.
Yeah.
But that was very helpful.
Yeah.
Just to start. Because
that's
her point
so
was
brave. I don't know if I could stay in it for 30 minutes. I just want to,
it was hard.
I just want to praise you. That is so brave.
It was really hard, especially, I mean, those 2 weeks were tough because you like cry, you feel all the negative emotions available, but then you have this like, and I was so tired of feeling that way that I was like, I'm going to try this and see what happens. And then you decrease it. And I think the idea is that the more you push back against negative thoughts, the stronger they will.
Agreed. That's right. That's
and
right.
So in giving them space, if you think of like the little animated emotions of that Disney Pixar
Inside Out.
Of Inside Out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In like giving them space, you almost reduce their power. And so it wasn't perfect, but that helped a lot. And then the other thing that was helpful when I started working with you, Nicole, was learning how to tell my story. And almost like, I think one of the things that we worked on was, and when I was introducing myself, talking about myself as the role that I wanted. So in my case, it was like, I'm a product marketing manager. And just like stepping into those shoes, like, and putting yourself in that position, even verbally, I think starts to mentally make you feel like this is true, like this is what I am or what I need. It's like a combination. And I'm still working on it. I think it's, there's still like, obviously, I haven't completely managed to like divorce myself from brands, even though I think about these things, right? But it's a process, I guess. And maybe
it's
one day,
definitely a process.
maybe one day I'll achieve nirvana.
You know, one thing I love to remind myself of is the Dalai Lama was asked a few years ago what his biggest struggle is. The Dalai Lama, the person who practices active compassion, like that's his job, right? And his answer was compassion. I was in a conversation and I didn't feel like I was being, my skill level was being appreciated. And so what did I do? I pulled out my old title as a former global senior director in a tech industry, right? And I was like, wow, that's so interesting that I'm still in periods and places and moments reaching for that external validation.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's an important strategic step. Like in that case, they stopped pushing back. Like, yes,
yeah,
I know about data privacy globally. But in other times, it's like, actually, I want to stand for my brand. And Marina wants to stand for hers.
Yeah. I think like it's a combination, right? Because we live in a society where these things matter. And like being on LinkedIn and having brands and whatever, it still matters. So it's not to say that they don't. Because I'm like, I don't want to diminish anyone who's like, oh yeah, but she's coming, has like two Ivy League degrees. Like, what is, like, this doesn't make, now you decide to not care about brands. So they do matter, unfortunately, but I
they
think
do.
It's having like a separation, like understanding that externally they matter, but also knowing that internally you're so much more than all of that. And then that there's, and working towards a world where those brand names don't matter as much because there's so much value in people who like achieve things in life in other ways, right? I had this conversation with a friend of mine who's from like a low income Latinx family. They're like proper immigrants. And I say this considering myself not a very like proper immigrant in the sense that I didn't really have much struggles in that sense, but she was working in a VC company for like Latinx companies. It was like a Latino focused VC. And she had so much frustration with the principal manager of the VC because they would get these founders' resumes. And if he would say, oh, they went to this random school, like, I don't necessarily trust them.
Oh, yeah.
And she was someone who had like literally fought her way tooth and nail, had been to community college before she made it to like a 4-year university, then had worked her way up like JP Morgan and had like done incredibly well. And now was at Wharton next to me, who like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I worked hard, but I did not work that hard like as she did. So it's, you just have to work towards a world where people are valued for their intrinsic worth and not their brand name.
But what an excellent reminder. Like, you and I are women. I'm a white woman of European descent. I got my DNA done. So I can say exclusively, sadly. my family were all very good Catholics. Your family's originally from.
I'm Colombian, but I'm Colombian also from European descent.
Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
like I can't really claim. I'm definitely not a minority in Colombia, even if I'm a minority here.
Right. And we had access to a lot of things, but some of the things that we had access to were misogyny. Women aren't as good as men, right? Hatred of women, and then white supremacy, right? And the 15 tenets of white supremacy, I'll put it in the show notes. We're not going to go through all 15, but one of them is elitism, status, right? And even with, and I have, talked about this in a lot of different places, and it's something that I perpetually face inside of myself is even if I am outside of power in certain ways, I still drift towards the definition of power in other ways. So I went to the University of Pittsburgh is where I graduated from. And yeah, it was on my resume, but in Europe, I didn't tell people where I graduated from. I hid that I grew up poor. I hid that I had a stutter. I hid that, right? Because I had this idea inside of my mind, which was quite frankly, often to your friend's story that you shared with us, confirmed by the statements and the behavior of the people around me who had power. Again, to your career advice, like remember the intrinsic value. Because when I began to share that perspective, when I began to claim personality traits that I have and lived experience that I had, I was actually more important at those tables. But first, I had to build my confidence.
Yeah, exactly. And know that I think this outward perception of you can work to shift it, and it doesn't necessarily define who you are. I think in the US, it's funny because I grew up in Miami in an area that's very, very Latin American and a very similar socioeconomic cut of Latin American. The non struggling immigrants, I'll call them. And then I moved to other parts of the US where the view of someone who's Latin American or Hispanic is that like really negative view and like, well, I guess white supremacist view of like an immigrant in a certain type of position. And I had to reckon with that, like, different view of the world and different view of people seeing me. And so I think in those cases as well, it's like you have to kind of stand your own ground and remember your own worth separate from whatever of these like societal perceptions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is something that. So, when I was still running global teams, I had a member on one of my teams who was a Black man from England. And he would tell me he would be treated in a certain manner. He's out shopping or, trying to get something done, entering a child's school. And then, as soon as he opened his mouth, with a British accent, it was such a
Like a
shift,
shift.
right? Like, oh, right. And I remember sitting at a table. So I dated a gentleman from Colombia for a while, and his family was also quite well off. Everyone was educated, very engaged, not very religious, all of these things. And I remember sitting at a table and listening to someone from our college make assumptions. I think there was even an assumption. Maybe we were joking about it later, but maybe it was the actual assumption. I don't know. It was like 25 years ago. That was something along the lines of like, oh, so is your father like just a gardener, or does he run his own gardener services? Right. And it was like,
Yeah, exactly.
can laugh
Exactly.
about it now. But man, yeah, there's just so many times that society is going to give us the chance to undermine ourselves, and we get to decide to do it if
Yeah.
we want to.
And I think like I talk about this a lot with like the affirmative action laws that the Supreme Court ruling. I benefited from affirmative action having, I think, probably wrongly benefited from it, right? Because in that, those like Hispanic slots were probably suited for someone who, I don't know, was had to go to a public school and like had to like, I mean, I'm not saying that public school was like a terrible thing, but like my point is someone had to like struggle actually, and for who this was going to be like a really big leg up. Whereas I was going to the same like SAT tutors that I'm sure many like
wealthy
working
white
class,
people,
wealthy white people could access, but also like working class white people could not access. And so it's, there's this like misconception of race in the US
Yes.
that you have to kind of fight against and stand your ground against.
And just because, you know, I can't stand not saying the thing. So just to have said the thing, you know, just so that we're all clear, the status quo of this country, and I would argue most places in the world, is affirmative action for white people. So I am from Appalachia. Why could Nicole go to school? Why was my bus pass paid for a certain period of time? Why did I have additional federal and various scholarships? It's because of the perception that people in Appalachia are white.
Yeah.
So there's commitment into my space. So just so that we're all clear, when we talk about affirmative action and like not having affirmative action, what we're actually saying is we want to prioritize more white people. So you don't have to agree with me, but I am saying it on my podcast.
Yeah, I just think it should be more like socioeconomic and like opportunities. But agreed. Like there should, I think there's this perception that race is like just very, it's a very narrow perception of race.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely agree. And I think that that's also a lot of the times by design, right? Because when we can see the humanity in each other as individuals, outside of farcical racial categories, we're going to be working on solutions that matter to the majority of us. And the majority of us are not buying our bigger yacht with the baby yacht and the helipad on it.
Or asking a country to deconstruct a bridge so you can get your yacht across.
Just as two theoretical examples. But let's talk about positive people. So who was your brave role model that you wanted to share with us?
I have like two buckets that I think about. I was thinking about this question. So one is a little cliche, but is both of my parents are entrepreneurs. And in this entire process, like, so actually I interviewed my dad for a class that I had at Wharton last semester, and I was asking him about his like entrepreneurial journey, and I was like, how did you just decide to go? He left a corporate job and started like, I think he started what now probably like two companies since leaving that job. And he was just like, yeah, I just did it. Like he just went out and did it. It's like, yeah, I had to like provide for you guys. So I just went out and did it. And like, he's like, sure, I had doubts, but he just like, the first company he started with my uncle, they started importing playgrounds to Colombia. And they like had read about the mayor of Bogota creating this subsidy for playground makers because playgrounds were actually very expensive in Colombia at the time. They weren't like in country manufacturers. And so there was this like big government subsidy to fund new playgrounds and all this need for new playgrounds and like public spaces. So my dad and my uncle traveled to Alabama, I think in the US, to meet with some huge playground manufacturer in the US, had never exported to Colombia, and somehow convinced them to give them this contract of like of shipping playgrounds to Colombia. And without having anything, like no government contracts, nothing. And they won this, and it was like the big, then they started like making these parks, and they had the biggest deal in parks that this company had ever seen in their entire history. And they just went and did it. They just went and did this. It's crazy. And so I think that was one of my like brave role models, because I'm like, wow, my dad was able to just do this in a time when, like, I mean, it was like the 90s, before you could like
Yes.
stalk people on LinkedIn and message them. Like, I think I can do a bit more of hustling. So that's one. And then my other one, kind of breaking the rules here of one role model, but
Oh,
my
I'm
other one was
in. Bring me
one of
another one.
my former manager boss, who's been like a mentor for me for my first company. This is more of like a personal story, and this story is public, so I feel fine sharing it. But she's had like a very successful career, as was incredibly supportive to me as a manager, really strategic, really smart, works really, really fast. But for me, her brave story is she was married at one point and had always dreamt of having kids, and her husband at the time didn't want children.
No.
And so they ended up getting a divorce, and she was at that point like in her mid-30s and said, like, if I wait to meet someone else, I won't have kids. And so she just had two girls by herself. She did like, I guess, artificial insemination with like a friend of hers, and now she has these two beautiful girls. She got remarried last year. And for me, it's such an incredible example of taking, I guess they're both related, it's like taking your own life into your own hands
Yes.
and I guess making your destiny and not waiting for someone else to do it for you. So she's my
Wow.
other brave role model.
Both of those stories. Wow.
Yeah.
That is, yeah, beautiful. Thank you. Oh,
Yeah, I'm
that's
glad I'm.
exciting. Well, is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we missed?
I don't think so. I think we covered a lot of things. But yeah,
Yeah.
I guess my final thing is, yeah, know your own worth and take control of your own destiny. I guess with those last two stories I shared, which I'm hoping to work on and be able to do. But
Me too. This is
yeah.
an ongoing. Could not end on a better note. Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. This is exciting, my first podcast.
I love being the first podcast for people.
Bye.
All righty, everyone. Until next week, take care. Brave it up. If the Build Your Brave Career podcast is helping you flip the script in your own career, if it's helping you reduce your stress, work smarter, or create more income, please share this with a friend. Till next time, you are already brave. Now go build your brave.